This week's Shiurim have been sponsored by Family Taylor, Lichvod Simchas HaNesuim, which is Binyamin Taylor and Mary Govich.
Yud Tes Cheshvan, Wednesday the 23rd of October, Rabbi Jeremy Kagan, the Akeda, passing the torch from Avram to Yitzhak.
I think something that can be helpful as we're going through these parshios in the beginning of Bereishis, something that can give us a kind of a framework within which we can try to understand the stories that we're reading here, is to realize that we're not just looking at major historical events which form the Jewish people, but rather what we're looking at is events which shape profound personalities who ultimately give their, what we call their spiritual genetics to the Jewish people, and it's their personal journey and their personal development that ultimately is founding the future of Kol Yisrael. Really, what's our task as we're reading these parshas? We're trying to understand the challenges that these remarkable individuals are facing, the way they're dealing with them, and how they change as a result of that, and for that to be some kind of a guide to us in terms of how we ourselves, in our own way, can be changing ourselves and going on our journey and our own development. This would be true both in terms of how we learn their midos and also on any, what we might call, their intellectual insights. In other words, we don't look at the avos merely as people who have given us something that we've inherited, so much as we look at them as individuals who set examples of how we ourselves, in our own right, can it make achievements which are comparable or which parallel the ones that they themselves have made. The Chovas HaLevavos talks about the fact that even though obviously it's important for us to accept the words of the Chachamim, but that the fact that the Chachamim have said something doesn't absolve us from our own personal responsibility to come to our own conviction of the truth of the things that they're saying. We don't merely inherit their ideas. In a certain sense, we inherit the responsibility to come to the conviction of the truth of the ideas that they themselves came to. When we're trying to understand the avos, the first focus should be on the midos. We have a number of chazals that speak about the profound consequences for individuals of both good midos and bad midos. Right, less of a focus on doing specific mitzvahs to achieve Olam Haba, or obviously there are ones that talk about that, but we also have ones that talk about Olam Haba being dependent upon our fixing our midos, or the fact that our not making it into Olam Haba, or whatever else might be happening, might come from problems in those midos. Our midos are really what we might call the platform through which our more spiritual self comes into the world. And the effectiveness of that platform in conveying or bringing that spiritual self into the world is going to make all the difference between how much we can accomplish as individuals. Bad midos is something that's going to make it difficult to be doing midos. Good midos is something that is going to facilitate our doing mitzvahs. When we talk about the effect of our midos on our avodas Hashem, we're not just talking about something helps and something hinders. Rather, the individual midos that characterize us as people very much color the way that we understand our world, color the way we understand our responsibilities in the world, and color the way each and every one of us are developing as people. We encounter the world through these midos, and they change the way that we react to the world and understand what's going on to the world or grow from that world. When we look at Avram, right? Avram, who is our example at this point, we know already from Micha, we already know what his defining Mida was and what it is we're trying to understand, what the process of development is that we're trying to understand as we look at Avraham. Titein emes le'Yaakov chesed le'Avraham. Everybody knows, what's the big Mida of Avraham? What really defines him as a person? Chesed, right? It's chesed. When we think about this Mida of chesed, we normally associate it as something which is involved in Bein Adam l'Chaveru, in our mitzvahs as we relate to other people. But Chazal make clear that when we're talking about the chesed of Avraham, it's a much more global thing in terms of affecting the way that he's relating to the world. When we recognize what was Avraham Avinu's, what was Avraham's first great achievement? We have a whole, many things that he does for us that we get through him. But what's the first thing that he did, and what do we remember for more than anything else? Smashing the idols. And why is he smashing those idols? Because he recognized the Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? The great achievement of Avraham Avinu, the first great achievement of Avraham Avinu, is he recognized the existence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But Chazal tell us, what was the path he traveled in order to come to that recognition? So the Medrash tells us that Avraham, from an early age, was hidden away in a cave. There had been a dream or there had been actually a revelation in the sky. The astrologers of Nimrod had seen that Terach had a child, was ultimately going to turn his world on his head. They advise that he should kill him. Nimrod hides Avram Avinu in a cave for the first 3 years of his life. Terach hides Avram in a cave for the first 3 years of his life. At the age of 3, for the first time, he emerges into the world, seeing the snow-capped mountains of Syria, whatever it is. And what's his first question?
Who made it?
So who made this? But we could, to understand what's going on here, we could actually slightly change that question. Not to say who made this, but who gave this. In other words, what leads him to ask the question, who made this? It's a sensitivity that if there's something here, there must be a source to the thing that's here. Who gave this? And what sensitizes Avram Avinu to ask this question? So ultimately, you may remember to the days of your youth in the playgrounds of your cheder or of your kindergarten, somebody teasing you, it takes one to know one. So that actually has some rather important consequences here. If we ask ourselves, how can Avram ask the question at the age of 3, who gave this? The answer is, he has that nida of chesed, that he himself is a giver, and the fact that he's a giver sensitizes him to giving in the world, that he asks the question, if there's something here, it must have been given from someone. When we look at this, what we, in a certain sense, look at it as a more intellectual discovery of Avram Avinu, something we associate with as Bein Adam Lamakom, the discovery of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. If we look carefully, we see what lies at the heart of this discovery. Again, we go back to that defining midah of Avram, which is his midah of chesed. It's not only affecting the way he relates to people, it affects his whole understanding of the world, and therefore is the basis of, ultimately, his discovery of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. If we want to appreciate the greatness that's taking place here, what's the example that Avram is setting for us that we can sort of follow in his footsteps on some level to really go through this process of discovering a Kaddish Baruch Hu our own? What is really going on with this Midah of Chesed? One of our difficulties here when we look at this Medrash is we tend to view Avram as if he's living in the same world that we live in. In the world that we live in, if someone would merely ask the question, where did this come from, they would already be a profound spiritual individual. We completely take our world for granted. We look at it as a physical world that's given to us. It's just there. To ask where did it come from is already a major step beyond where the rest of the world is holding. But Avram did not live in our world. He lived in a world which was filled with idolatry, with idol worship. It means everybody recognizes that there's something behind the world. So if everyone recognizes something behind the world, what was the great chiddush? What was the great advance that Avram accomplished? That he was able to discover the Borei Olam. The answer to that, we need to really understand a little bit more deeply what we're really talking about when we talk about this midah of chesed. Chesed we would translate normally as just an act of kindness. But the truth is that's a rather generic translation of it and would actually include a number of different character traits within it. For example, if you're walking down the street and someone comes up to you and asks you for, I mean, in America it's for a dime, a quarter, or a dollar. Here it's probably, I guess they're looking for, what's the going rate now? A pound, a half a pound, whatever it is. They ask you some money, so your response is to give them. What character trait are you exercising in giving them? So the truth is it depends on the size of the person who's asking you, right? If he's very large, then it's your character trait of self-preservation. But if it's someone who's maybe not as large as you, right, what character trait are you showing in giving the tzedakah? It's what?
Feeling bad for him.
Well, the truth is, I mean, well, feeling bad for him might be a one, but the primary thing is I'm actually reacting to the need of the other person and giving it. That's not called chesed. That's called rachamim. That's called mercy. My act is being catalyzed by something outside of me. There's a kindness involved there. It's in the generic category of chesed, but it's not specifically an act of chesed. When we talk about an act of chesed on a technical level, what we're talking about is not merely an act of kindness, but the actual initiation of an act of kindness, meaning that I choose to do something because it's who I am and I want to give. I'm not giving to you because you need and I feel bad for you. I'm giving because I am a giving person and want to give to you. It's something that's a totally internally motivated act. The truth is, in the world that we live in, it's obviously not so easy to find a pure act of chesed because we're almost always react on some level to the world around us. We want to look for an absolutely pure act of chesed. What would we point to? The truth is, there's really only one thing, which is a Kaddish Baruch Hu's decision to create the world. Because he was certainly not reacting to anything outside of him because...
There's no limit.
There wasn't anything before he created the world. There was nothing but a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The purest act of chesed that we can identify is the decision or the act of creating the world, that act by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But the point is, when we say that Abraham has the character trait of chesed, what we're saying is that he has that characteristic of initiating giving, being a giving person, being a source for other people. And the fact that he has this instinct, not merely for giving in some generic sense, but the fact that actually it's coming from you and it's starting from you. You're the one who's motivating and creating the act. That means when he looks at the world and says, I see this world is giving, he's not satisfied with any answer that's going to be a halfway answer. He's looking for the what we would call the initiator of creation. When we look at all the works of the Avodah Zarah, the different myths that they give for how the world was created, the creator is never the beginning of everything. The creator itself is something which came into the world through something else. It's some intermediary stage in the process. And really what you're asking, what the Avodah Zarah were asking when they asked the question, who created the world, they're really asking, who brought it to the state that it's in now that's in front of me? They're not asking who was the ultimate beginning. I'll give you an example like this. You're sitting on the mountainside looking wistfully at some beautiful scene in the plains of Scotland, or if you're lucky, the Hari Yerushalayim, and you wistfully ask, where did all this come from? And the person sitting next to you says, well, you know, there's been a few thousand years of rain and erosion that brought the soil down in, and there the trees grew, and that's where it all came from. And you say, well, you know, that's not exactly what I had in mind. He says, oh, you're deep. Okay, well, see, there are these continental plates that are scraping across one another, pushed the mountain up, and the rain came, and then there was erosion, and then there was trees, and that's where this beautiful scene come from. And you say, well, that's not exactly what I was asking. He says, oh, you're very deep. Well, you see, there was this gravity, and it pulled all these particles together, and it created a planet, and there were these continental plates, and then there was this and that, and that's where all this beautiful scene came from. And you say, you know, you're really not getting to my point. Because, oh, you're very deep. Well, there was a big bang. So, everything's answered. Except what's not. Like, fine, there's a big bang, but who banged the big bang? Right? Where did all the stuff come from that banged when there was a big bang? Right? When you're answering questions like Big Bang, what you're doing is you're finding a situation that pre-exists the one you're in. I can explain where this situation came from what was before it, but I'm never finding a true beginning. I'm not finding the true beginning, what initiated the whole thing. When Avraham Avinu asked that question, and Oved Avodah Zarah is satisfied with an intermediary answer. But when Avraham asked the question, he was looking for the source. He was asking for who or what is the one who brought this into being that I can never ask, where did he come from? Because if you ask the question, where did he come from, you don't understand what I'm talking about. I'm looking for the initiator and the beginning of creation. When Avraham Avinu asked the question on that level, he was forced to go beyond the world that we live in and recognize there's a source that transcends this one, the unitary, necessary being who is the source of existence itself. But my point is simply that if I want to understand what is the greatness of Avraham here in the discovery of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's not merely it's coming through his character trait of chesed, but rather because he's taking chesed to its final degree, he's pushing it to its very essence, which is, I'm looking for an initiator of the world around me. I'm sensitive to that level of creation. And only because he's pushing the meter to that level does he go beyond what the idolaters were able to discover on their own, to a recognition that there's a Borei Olam that stands outside of the world and is the source of all of existence itself. That it all goes back, number one, to that need of chesed, of kindness, even on this intellectual Bein Adam L'Makom level, and also that it's not merely a sort of a cloudy sense of goodness, but rather Avraham is taking the essence of this midah and pushing it to its very to its final degree, and that's the thing that's leading to this level of discovery. And if you want the inspiration or the guidance that we ourselves gain from this particular facet of Avraham's life is exactly this idea. The inspiration or the example that he's setting for us is the need not merely to work with our midos, but to push those midos. To push them and push them. We're looking at a lifetime of service in terms of Avraham Avinu that's leading him, ultimately, not a lifetime, but we're looking at what years, according to the Medrash, it took him from the age of 3 to the age of 48. to come to this conclusion is he's searching, where did it come from? What is it? Where did it come from? Asking the question over and over and over again, finding answers that weren't satisfying, destroying them is what really the destruction of the idols really means. Coming to a conclusion, realizing it's an idol, destroying it, going on, another idol, destroying it, until suddenly the Ruach HaKodesh comes, the divine inspiration that allows Avram to recognize what it is we're really talking about when we talk about a Borei Olam.
Sorry, why is it invalid to ask, to work backwards and say, so who created Hashem?
So I'm saying, when you ask that question, it means you didn't know what he said when he discovered Hashem. Because the whole point is, the way he was asking the question meant, the entity that he's identifying is that which is the source of everything. He didn't know who it was. He didn't know what it is. But he knows that's what it is that he's looking for, and he knew with such clarity that that's what he's looking for, he's willing to risk his life. At the age of 48, he comes to this decision. He's thrown into a fiery furnace by Nimrod because of it. Kadosh Baruch doesn't speak to him until he's 75. 27 years later, he hears nothing. He's still willing to risk his life for it because he knows what it is he's looking for, even though, in other words, anything that you could ask the question, what came before it, wasn't what he was talking about. Because by definition, he's looking for the initial source. By definition, it would be an idol. He's not looking for that. He doesn't know what it is or where it is. He can't point to it, but he knows it exists, and that's what he's worshipping. You know what I'm saying? This is a little bit difficult. It's like, it's difficult, but it's crucial. In other words, I don't know who, he didn't know who it was. But whatever it is the source. It's a necessary being that has always existed, because otherwise it's not an answer. Who is it? Where is it? What is it? I have no idea, but I know it exists. It has to exist. Therefore, I worship it. So I'm saying, Abraham looks at the world and realizes from the world doesn't explain its own existence. It has to have a source. Everybody asked that question in his day. The question is whether you would push the question to the point where you came to the Borei Olam, this necessary being who's transcended from this world.
I mean, how can he worship when he doesn't know?
What? I can't hear you.
How can he worship when he doesn't know?
He knows what his characteristics are, even though he can't point to it or give it a name, because by definition it's not in the world, it's out of the world. And it's at certain point, this is already another shir, he develops them to the point that Kadosh Baruch actually opens to him in prophecy. But that's 27 years later.
Why did he learn from Noah?
What?
Why did he learn from Noah?
Well, the Midrash talks about the number of people. There were a few individuals that existed that had a memory of a Kadosh Baruch from the past. Noah is one of them, Shem Ve'ever, who were very, very far away. But, apparently, you know, Noah was not a public figure that's going around. The whole point is we know the characteristic of Noah was not that he was preaching to other people. It was the knowledge that he had privately. We don't have any record of Avram having any influence. The whole point is that, according to the Medrash, Avram had no influence from anyone outside of himself. It was his personal discovery. And the real greatness of his achievement is that it was a personal discovery, and the strength of the conviction that it came to him brought him to a whole life of service to this thing he knows is there, even though he doesn't know who it is or what it is. They actually lived in this. They were in the same area. They were actually in the same area. But
have they met?
Yes. We don't have any records. As I'm saying, the Medrash says it's clear from the Medrash that they didn't, because he came. The whole point of the Medrash is his own personal discovery. Yeah.
Who met who?
Abraham didn't meet Noah, which means that his awareness of Kadosh Baruch was something that he discovered on his own. So the point.
Imagine that he didn't make a method to try to get to Noah.
Well, if you don't know who Noah is,
sure. There was 58 years of his life, the last years of Noah.
I'm saying from the 100%. But the Medrash itself makes clear that his recognition of the Kadosh Baruch was actually his own personal discovery. That's what I'm saying, that we have to assume that Noah was someone who was much more of a private person. The Medrash does say that he was public about at the time when they were building the tower, but which was actually the same year that Avram himself came to his own conclusion of the existence of the Kadosh Baruch. Anyway, as we move forward in Avram's life, we come to the parsha that we read last week, Vayera. Did you want to ask something? We come to the parsha of Vayera. Once we come to Vayera, for the first time, we see a more classic application of this midah of chesed. We see Avram doing an act of kindness to other people. Right? He's sitting in the tent. He's recovering from his bris milah. Three people walk by. He goes out. He washes their feet, gives them something to eat. Right? This is, again, our first real example in the Chumash of what we would consider classic chesed. Here our problem is that from Medrash it's clear that this was considered an act of absolute profound chesed, something that actually changes the course of history. The Medrash tells us every detail of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's conduct with the Jewish people in the Midbar, in Eretz Yisrael, and even Olam Haba, were based on the details of how it is that Avram did this act of chesed. And our first difficulty when we encounter this particular mice is to understand what's the big deal. Right? We understand he's in pain as he's doing this, but you know, any woman that's given birth, it should be an Avram Avinu claim, but they are Avram Avinu. I gotta be careful, this is being taped, whatever, but we don't understand how this changes the course of history. In this particular one, again, the way to understand the essence of what's going on here is to put this in the context of Avram Avinu's personal development. What's happened immediately preceding this is Avram gets the mitzvah of Bris Milah, and in fact, Bris Milah is really creating the whole story here. He's in the tent, he's suffering from having done the Bris Milah, Kadosh Baruch is visiting with him, and these people come. What is the development of Avram personally that the Milah represents? So one of the immediate effects that we see of the Milah is when a Kadosh Baruch reveals himself to give him the command of the Milah, Avram immediately collapses in a way that's comparable to what we know is the way that prophets generally experience nevuah, which is it's such an overwhelming experience that they collapse. They have something approaching an epileptic seizure as they're in the midst of this encounter with the divine. Yet, when we begin Parshas Vayera, one pasuk later, the new Parsha, we find that as the Kadosh Baruch reveals himself in the tent, Avram is sitting. He's just sitting there, right? He's sitting there. What changed that in the prior parsha where there's Nevuah, Avram collapses, and in this one, he's sitting there? So the hint of this is another change that we find that comes as a result of the Milah, which is Avram's name changes, right? His name changes. He goes from Avram to Avraham as a result of the Bris Milah. Rashi there explains what's the difference between Avram and Avraham. Avraham is the numerical value of 248, which is the significance is that's the number of limbs on the body and also positive mitzvahs. So says Rashi, before Avram had the Bris Milah, Avram, the numerical value 243, was someone who could use those 243 limbs to serve a Kaddish Baruch, but he had five limbs that he couldn't control: his eyes and his ears and the Makom HaBris. Those were in their own reshus, so to speak, on some level. Meaning, these are the limbs by which we connect to the world around us, right? Anytime there's something I'm not supposed to look at, where do my eyes immediately go? Right there. Right? In shul, when someone's saying, good geschmack, lashon hara, where does my ear go? It's like, louder please, I can't hear you, right? It's very difficult for us to control where our ears go, where our eyes go, Malcolm Bris also, right? Koy says Rashi, as a result of the Bris Milah, Avram gained complete control over these limbs, meaning he became, in his entirety, a perfect vessel for the expression of a Kadosh Baruch Hu into the world. Every one of his limbs was a bridge between a Kadosh Baruch Hu and physical reality. What?
Five.
The hay is five, that's what added, right? Two eyes, two ears, and the Makom HaBris. So from here we can understand what the change is, that originally he collapses and then he sits down. When I plug in usually the example of a fan, but in England I guess a heater is probably a better one. If I plug in a heater into the socket, what happens? It heats. It does exactly what it's supposed to be. It's what it's supposed to do. If I stick my hand into a socket, what happens? Something a little different, right? Now, my wife might have a different opinion, but I consider myself a higher being than a heater. So how come the heater heats when it plugs in, whereas I have a rather different experience by sticking my hand in the socket? The reason is because the heater is designed to process all the energy that's going through it. It doesn't back up. When I stick my finger in the socket, there's no place for all that energy to go, and therefore it's an explosive experience. I can't contain it. The idea here is that prior to the Bris Milah, when Avram would be exposed to the revelation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it would be something so overwhelming because there was no place for all that energy to go that he collapses in the experience. But after the Bris Milah, all the energy, all the revelation of the Kadosh Baruch Hu was able to filter through him into the world around him, because every facet of his personality is a bridge between Ruchnius and Gashmius, Kadosh Baruch Hu, into physical reality. That's the change of the Bris. But what's happening here is, what was happening in the first part of Lech Lecha is Avram is developing his intellectual understanding of who Kadosh Baruch Hu is and how he's connecting him to the world. Here with the Bris Milah, he now gains the ability to bridge that connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu down into physical reality for the first time in its entirety. He's a perfect vessel to bring the Shekhinah into the world. Yeah.
So why is it that future prophets have also experienced that type of thing?
This is Avram who is able to, he's creating the what we can be, but it doesn't mean that each one of us is going to be there, right? We're all working towards that. Moshe Rabbeinu also didn't. The thing is, Avram didn't collapse. I'm saying, Avram creates what is the limits of what we're able to accomplish. It doesn't mean that we all have that, but we have the capability, the potential of reaching that. And so we're saying each one of the Navim will be on the road towards what Avraham Avinu was, not necessarily achieving all that he gave us the ability and potential to achieve. Make sense? These Navim obviously had a tremendously high level to have this experience, but we're still not on the level. Avram is creating a potential that the potential isn't all actualized, but some of it's actualized. Anyway, so what is the real secret to understanding what's going on over here? How does this change our view of what's happening in the in this event that we can see what is so profound about the Chesed here? So the key lies in another difficulty in the Parsha, which is when Avram runs out to these peasants, he says the following thing. He says, Adonai, imna matzasi chen beinecha, al tavor me'alavdecha. My master, if I found favor in your eyes, please don't pass away. And what's the story? Pass, come in, I'll wash your feet, we'll have some bread, we'll have a good time together. Right? What's going on? What's the whole... So we have to keep in mind clearly what the Seder of the story is here. Avram's in the tent. He's sitting. He's in pain from the meal. God reveals himself to him. Bikur cholim. Then these people pass by. He runs out to them and he says to them, please don't pass away. You know, let me wash your feet. Who's he speaking to when he says, my master, please don't pass away? The machlokas. But why is it a machlokas? Because the order of the psukim means, according to the order of the psukim, who must he be speaking to? He must be speaking to these three people because he already left the tent. He left the tent, so he's definitely talking to these people according to the order of the psukim. I can squeeze it and say, well, the psukim aren't necessarily in order, maybe he's talking to the Kaddish Baruch Hu, but the Pashup Shad is definitely talking to these people. So the problem is we have a vowel problem. If he's talking to the people, he could either be talking to the leader, in which case it's Adoni, like the taxi drivers in Israel are always saying to you, right? Adoni. If he's speaking to the group, it's Adonai. But the vowel we have is Adonoi, which is only used for Kaddish Baruch Hu. So from the vowel, he must be speaking to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. From the order of the psukim, he must be speaking to the people. Therefore, say Chazal. Read it however you want. Because neither one is totally satisfying. That's not really the kind of way we like to leave a Chazal. We have to understand it one step deeper, which is the pshat is the ambiguity. Meaning, when Avraham Avinu is speaking to people, we don't know if he's speaking to people or to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Because when he talks to a person, he penetrates right to the tzelem elokim of that individual, and he's relating to that facet, that depth, that significance of the human being that's in front of him. The word Adonai is vowel like it's to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, but is actually directed towards them because this is the ambiguity. This is the chesed of Avraham Avinu. To be able to engage the tzelem elokim, the depth, the essence of the person. In fact, we learn from here the essence of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, which is what does a person really need more than anything else? He doesn't need a shekel. He doesn't need a sandwich. He needs the affirmation of his humanity and the significance of that humanity. That's the basis of all true Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And this is achieved, this possibility is achieved by Avraham Avinu at this point as a consequence of the bris milah that allows him to bridge the Shechina with physical reality. And the first and foremost place we see this is in the depth of the chesed that Avraham achieves. And this is an inspiration to us. What are we really striving to do? And the Gedolim are famous for this. I mean, there are two kinds of Gedolim. The ones that are really sharp that you're afraid to meet, and the kind that when you meet them, it's only a personally uplifting experience in terms of your own appreciation of your own greatness. You know, you walk in thinking, wow, I'm going to really have a major experience. I'm going to meet this Gedolim. And you walk out thinking, wow, he's pretty lucky to meet me. Because of the way that he looks at you, he sees more in you than you see in yourself. He's able to recognize that because of his own personal development. Chesed, right? The chesed... Chesed, we learn from Avraham Avinu first is an inspiration that we can go on our own personal journey to come to our own personal conviction of the existence of the Kaddish Baruch Hu to the development of the Midah of Chesed, and that we can push this Midah of Chesed to the limit where we can come to the point where we can genuinely give to another person what it is they really need, which is an affirmation. It's not just I'm not just affirming their humanity, I actually bring it out as a result of recognizing that person. I bring it into the world. It's like when you show that kind of kindness to another person, you see their face light up. It comes into the world from them on a different level because you facilitated coming into the world through you. Ultimately, we're really supposed to be talking about the Akedah, right? Avram's journey really ends with the Akedah. It ends with the Akedah, which is the end of last week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, Chayisar, is really cleaning up and preparing for the time for Yitzhak, who will be now the Avi, who is leading the development of the basis of Kol Yisrael. The Akedah is clearly an event where it's much more difficult to find this chesed animating what's going on over here, and the answer is because it's really not. The point of the Akedah is, here's a point where Avram was commanded by Kadosh Baruch Hu to do something which runs absolutely counter to his essential midah. Right? Up until now, what he's doing is he's developing and pushing the implications and the potential of that midah. The end of his journey, that final test, that final achievement, is to come to the point where I'm not developing myself for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but I realize that my relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu means I'm even willing to undo myself for the sake of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is not a development of midah. This is a pure act of avodah where I do it simply not because it's me, but because this is what a Kadosh Baruch Hu commands me to do. What's the challenge he's really faced with over here? Are my personal values more important to my relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Which means you're putting those values above a Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is heresy. Or do I recognize I only have values because a Kadosh Baruch Hu has created those values, and it all comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, just because I personally feel these values doesn't change the fact that I do these because they come from Hashem, and if a Kadosh Baruch Hu tells me to do otherwise, that's what I do. This is pure avodah, and this is the end of the path for Avraham Avinu. Once he does the Akedah, what he does is he proves both to himself and to the world that when he's doing these acts of kindness and pushing that kindness, not because he's a nice guy, but because he's a servant of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And with that, we move on to Yitzhak and the development of a whole different midah in the foundations of Kol Yisrael.